I am intentional.
I will plot and choose my course.
I will not wait to be blown from place to place.
I will do more than just react.
I will choose who I want to be and work to make that a reality.
I am wholehearted.
I will interact with the world from a place of worthiness, knowing my identity.
I will work to be able to feel, understand, and express my emotions.
I will allow my true self to be known.
I will leave my heart open to connect with others in a wholehearted way.
I am a man.
I have the responsibility to provide for my family, both temporally and spiritually.
I will use my special gifts to be able to make the world a better place.
I will protect and defend the vulnerable.
I will stand up when others sit down.
I will engage with others of like mind to strengthen and lift one another.
I am an intentionally wholehearted man. On this episode of The Intentionally Wholehearted Man, I wanted to discuss how to have our whole heart. And I want to start with a story, the story of the Tin Woodman from The Wizard of Oz. And then I'm going to talk about how we have lost our heart so often and some of the ways that that happens. I'm going to discuss emotional anorexia and emotional bulimia. And I'm doing this very much as a way to help other people to recognize the things that they're doing. So often I think we don't even realize how we're reacting in certain situations. And so I really want to shine a light on some of the things that we do. And I see a lot of emotional anorexia and sort of that emotional bulimia in the way that I act and a lot of the way that others act as well. And so I really wanted to go through some of this. I first want to start with the story of the Tin Woodman in The Wizard of Oz. And I first heard about this from John Eldridge in his book, Waking the Dead. And as I heard it, I heard a lot of things that he didn't go into that really fit my story and really fit some things that I see going on with others around me. And so I wanted to focus more on those. As I've said before, I feel like I'm a bit of an aggregator. I take different things that I hear and see different places and then tie it to my experiences and what I see in my own life. And so that's what I'm doing with this story. I didn't know this, but in the original book of The Wizard of Oz, the Tin Woodman had actually been in love with the Munchkin Maiden. And he was completely enchanted with her and wanted to marry her. She said that she would marry him when he had gotten enough money to build them a house. But she lived with a very lazy and not nice woman. And the woman wanted her to continue to cook and clean. It sort of sounds like that Cinderella type of story where she's looking for somebody to do all the work and she can just sit back and ease. And so this woman went to the Wicked Witch and asked the Wicked Witch to take care of the Tin Woodman. And so the Wicked Witch enchanted his axe. And when he was working one day, she made his axe slip. And he says, "And when I was chopping away at my best one day, for I was anxious to get the new house and my wife as soon as possible, the axe slipped all at once and cut off my left leg. This at first seemed a great misfortune, for I knew a one-legged man could not do very well as a woodchopper. So I went to the tinsmith and had him make me a new leg out of tin. The leg worked well once I was used to it." And so he goes back to work. And again, the axe slips, cuts off his other leg. The tinner helps replace his leg, and he goes back to work. He then loses both arms, and then eventually the Wicked Witch makes it slip and cut off his head, and he thinks he's done for, but the tinner comes along and makes him a new head out of tin. At that point, he says, "I thought I had beaten the Wicked Witch then, and I worked harder than ever, but little did I know how cruel the enemy could be. She thought of a new way to kill my love for the beautiful Munchkin Maiden and made my axe slip again so that it cut right through my body, splitting me into two halves. Once more, the tinsmith came to help me and made me a body out of tin, fastening my tin arms and legs and head to it by means of joints so that I could move around as well as ever. But alas, I had now no heart, so that I lost all my love for the Munchkin girl and did not care whether I married her or not." He then says, "My body shone so brightly in the sun that I felt very proud of it, and it did not matter how my axe slipped, for it could not cut me." We then know in the story that he was able to rest, and he gets caught out in the rain without his oil can and ends up resting for a year. During that year, he had time to think, and this is what he said. "But during the year I stood there, I had time to think that the greatest loss I had known was the loss of my heart. While I was in love, I was the happiest man on earth. But no one can love who has not a heart. And so I am resolved to ask Oz to give me one. If he does, I will go back to the Munchkin Maiden and marry her." At the very end, he says to the Cowardly Lion, or to the Scarecrow. The Scarecrow, if we remember, wanted brains. And the Tin Man says, "For brains do not make one happy, and happiness is the best thing in the world." So how do I see this story in my own life? I see that there have been many things that have hurt me. And each time I built up defenses to protect myself. Just like the Tin Woodman, when he lost his leg, the tinner made him one that couldn't be cut. And we do that with our hearts. When we are hurt, often we build protections around our heart. And we are thinking, okay, now I can't be hurt anymore. And the problem is we sit there and go, now I can be more productive because I can't be hurt anymore. And over time, just like the Tin Woodman, oh, now I can work harder. Now I won't get tired. Now I won't have to worry about these other things. And I personally threw myself into being productive. I threw myself into work. I threw myself into these other things that I hoped would bring me value to me and make me happy. The problem is, I kept walling off more and more of my heart so that it couldn't be hurt, and keeping that away from others. We think that we have become productive. We've beaten the Wicked Witch. I can work harder. I can work better than ever before. But once we lose our heart, we lose that connection to all the things that make life amazing. We wall ourselves off from other people. The other piece of this is when he talks about, "My body shone so brightly in the sun. I felt very proud of it and did not matter now if my axe slipped." How often do we sit there and focus on the things that we have, the things that we've gotten? We focus on accumulating wealth, accumulating things, but none of those ultimately matter if we've lost the connection to our heart and to those around us. And, you know, his realization after a while, how many of us have gotten to that point in our lives where we realize that it's not fulfilling? He said, I had time to think that the greatest loss I had known was the loss of my heart. And so I see this so much in how I have been and who I've been. And I came to that realization that I'd produced a lot, but I didn't have what I really wanted. And I didn't have the love of my wife. And I didn't have love for her because I didn't have my heart. As much as she wanted to connect to me, wanted to know who I was, my heart was locked up. An analogy that I think of a lot is that I kept building walls around my heart each time I was hurt. And I kept building those walls thicker and stronger to make sure that my heart could never be hurt again. At one point early in our marriage, my wife was asking me why I wouldn't let her in, why I wouldn't let her close. And I remember saying, I'm never going to let you close enough to me that you can hurt me. The problem is I built this castle around my heart. I had built a stronghold to where my heart couldn't be hurt. But then I was dying inside of that castle with those 2 foot thick walls of stone because I had no connection. Nobody could come in. I couldn't feel that love. And yes, I was safe. I couldn't be hurt necessarily, but I also was missing everything in life and missing the ability to connect to others. So, how does all of this relate to emotional anorexia? Emotional anorexia comes from our fear of abandonment and rejection. Emotional anorexia comes from our fear of being hurt. This very often leaves us in a place of building walls around us. We think this does a great job of actually keeping us safe, but in reality, it isolates us and keeps us from being able to actually connect with others. As with almost all conditions, emotional anorexia can be seen on a spectrum. Most of us have moments when we can't take something in. Praise, acknowledgement, empathy, admiration, or affection. When we are unable to accept praise and acknowledgement, we are in the beginning stages of emotional anorexia. So many times, my wife or others have tried to compliment me or say that I'm doing something well. So many times, I've felt uncomfortable being recognized. It is odd because we so want to feel seen and recognized, but when we are in this state, we are not in a place where we can accept those compliments. We can feel unworthy of the praise or affection that we are being given. Over time, when we are unable to receive or consistently deflect the recognition or affection, it can lead others to stop giving us compliments. We can see this as humility when in fact it is being unable to deal with the emotions and feelings that it brings up. Some people have been strongly influenced by negative talk about pride. They may have had experiences with prideful people. While pride can be a very bad thing, There are some people who are so afraid of even getting near pride that they use false humility and even become self-deprecating. They beat themselves up and focus on negative thoughts. They can pick apart every small action or mistake. Just like an anorexic person, they are slowly starving to death. The thing we need most is the thing that we cannot accept. We are looking for and wanting to be seen and acknowledged, but are completely unable to accept being seen. Underlying emotional anorexia is a fear of abandonment, a universal, primal fear that can become powerful enough to cause your primitive emotional brain to erect involuntary defenses aimed at protecting you from emotional harm. For emotional anorexics, this means avoiding closeness. Emotional anorexia can extend into your social world, walling you off from friends, family, and anyone else who tries to get close or express love. Hackles of fear go up. The very thing you need most creates the greatest fear and necessitates building the thickest walls to avoid the risk of abandonment. We can also have fears of rejection. I've seen myself cope with this by wearing masks and not letting others get close. Psychologically, this can be if they never get to close enough to know who I really am, when they reject me, they are not really rejecting me. They never really knew me. This sounds good in a very childish way, but again, keeps anyone from being able to connect with us and keeps us from truly being known. When this practice becomes common, it backfires as we lose track of who we really are and we miss out on the most needed connection. The flip side of our fear of abandonment is a fear of engulfment or enmeshment. This often comes from childhood, where we have family relationships where either we are the person who takes care of our parents, or we see all of our actions causing reactions in our parents. So when this has been something that we've seen a lot, we can completely wall ourselves off and not allow our emotions to be there because we're worried about how someone else will react or being completely overwhelmed by someone else's emotions. We keep our walls up and do not allow ourselves to see or deal with what someone else is dealing with. In this state, you simply cannot take in nourishment offered by a loving relationship because your hyper-alert defense system has been primed to elicit avoidance behaviors that work to prevent emotional penetration at all costs. Some people's pattern is best described as emotional bulimia. Initially, they are able to intake someone's love, but as it starts to metabolize, you expel it. I've seen as I have broken down some of those walls, I had moved into this space. With this, when I can initially be emotionally engaged, but as things get deeper, I begin to get overwhelmed. As I get overwhelmed and do not have time to process them, I can get to a point where I just cannot handle anymore. The vomiting is involuntary. Try as I might to keep it down, I can't keep from spitting it back up, sending their love and attention, along with my hopes of a relationship, down the drain once again. There are times where we can handle the first couple of compliments, but if it continues or seems to be brought to others' attention, we can become very uncomfortable and withdraw. Any negative self-talk can overwhelm the positive things being said. If we feel unworthy of love and attention, we can get to a place of resisting and pushing away any praise or recognition. We can be unwilling to take and receive compliments because we do not feel that we deserve them. This can come from compartmentalization or a lack of integrity. We can feel like if they really knew who I was, I would not get or deserve these compliments. This bulimia can once again leave us starving for love and recognition, but rejecting the very thing we need as it gets to a level that can sustain us. We have to address the negative messages about ourselves. We have to address the shame that we have. I will be doing a future podcast on shame where we will go much deeper into this subject. Another cause for the emotional bulimia is the fear of expectations or the managing of expectations. We can have a fear that we will be unable to meet others' expectations. A fear that if I allow these compliments to go on, I will have to live up to so much more. We can be unwilling to take and receive compliments because we want to live at a lower level. We do not want to have to work so hard. When the expectations are lower, we do not have to struggle. It is so much easier to live small. In the book, The Heart of a Warrior, Michael Thompson discusses how our enemy wants us to live small. He wants us to have the smallest impact possible. He asks if we are going to accept the terms of our enemy for us to live in peace, for him not to attack us, we have to live small. So to keep the peace and make it more comfortable, we often live small. We can fear having a real impact and standing out. We have a real fear or discomfort with being the center of attention. When the focus is too much on what we have done or what we have accomplished, we can want to pull back and blend into the shadows. We can just want anonymity. We want to live small. Over time, our emotional anorexia and bulimia can greatly affect our ability to have healthy relationships. These can lead to those close to us greatly reducing or completely stopping acknowledging the things we do and the accomplishments that we make. Another form of emotional bulimia is fault finding or nitpicking. We can be very happy with someone and really enjoy the connection we have with them. But as we get closer and those fears start to come in, we can begin to nitpick little things. We can find faults and be severely annoyed by little things. We let these things stand out more than the good things and connection, driving us away from the other person. I've seen many people who would meet and really like a great person, and then fairly quickly start finding very small things and focusing on them. Fairly quickly, they found the person very annoying. This was a constant pattern with them and kept them from building any long relationships. In the show Seinfeld, this was a recurring theme. The characters constantly displayed this pattern. None of them had any lasting relationships because they always found things to pick apart in everyone. Interestingly, the big thing that connected the group was how they picked others apart and constantly found faults. Recognizing that we start nitpicking the words or the actions of the other person when they are talking about hard or emotional things is a very important way for us to recognize and address when we might be having some emotional bulimia. If this is common for you, there is probably something underlying this reaction, some fear or something in our story that sends us to this place where we cannot bring in any more emotion. Another way these can look is when we can share our own emotions, but when the other person shares back, we completely shut down. With this dynamic, we are only getting our stuff out, but are completely unable to support the other person. This leaves us feeling lighter, but the other person can feel more burdened and completely unsupported. This leads to a real imbalance over time in the relationship. Another way this can look is like, I can hear and accept other emotions and their story, but it is way too overwhelming to share any of our own emotions and share our own story. In relationships like this, we can feel like we are being supportive, but in reality, we are suppressing and ignoring our own emotions. Eventually, they will come out. These types of relationships can be very negative, as only one of the two people in the relationship is really able to share. The other person is shut down or suppressing themselves. We can handle times of this in a relationship, but when this becomes the norm and goes on for long periods of time, this can become toxic. This pattern is okay when someone is going through a hard situation. They may need to share more or less as they process the situation. But if that is all the relationship is, it can lead to resentment and repressed emotions. The lack of emotional connections can leave us looking for quick counterfeit connections. Things like video games, social media, porn, and other ways of escaping from the feelings of being alone and disconnected. These escapes can, for the short term, give us an easy feeling of connection or achievement, but these are counterfeits for real connections. We as humans were made to connect. One problem we often have is that we want others to give us connection. Connection is a two-way street. It requires both giving and receiving connection. Often, some of the strongest feelings of connection come from us giving connection. This is when we truly learn who the other person is and come to love them. When we do not have complete and two-way connection in our lives, we can feel empty. I hope that you can look for the things in your life that are keeping you from true and complete connection, and take steps to recognize and address them. If we are being held back by fears, investigate them. Push into the fears and remember that those fears come from the enemy of our heart. Ultimately, our souls want us to live with our whole heart, for our whole heart to be engaged in living with and connecting to others each day. If we do not have our heart, we are missing out on so much of what the world has to offer and so much of what we naturally need. As the Tin Man said, the greatest loss I had known was the loss of my heart. I hope that if we have lost or walled up our hearts from hurts or fears, that we can work to break down those walls, work to recover our hearts, and the connection and joy that comes from truly knowing others and being known. If you've found anything in this episode of impact, or found something that you realize I need to work on, please share this with others who might be able to find this useful, and like, share, and subscribe. From everything I've been told, it really helps a lot to get more people able to find these messages. Thank you so much, and see you on the next Intentionally Wholehearted Man.